Hi, this is Andy Herman, producer of Outside the Loop Radio. Here's a clip from our audio archives available at OutsideTheLoopRadio.com with host Mike Steven.
Late last week, Andy, we found out some really shocking news, and it was a sad day in local journalism when we found this out. And this was broken on the Beachwood Reporter, Steve Rhodes. Our friend Steve Rhodes over there at Beachwood broke this story that the Chicago Reader had fired Tori Marlin, Harold Henderson, Steve Bogira, and John Conroy. And those names, I'm sure, are very familiar to listeners right now, because if you've ever picked up a Chicago Reader, you've read some great reporting from those four individuals. And if you've gone to ChicagoReader.com, especially in the case of Harold Henderson, you've read some great blogs. But really, this is like the Reader laying off four of their all-star writers. And when we heard about this, Andy, we were really shocked, and we thought this is something that we had to talk about here in Outside the Loop.
Yeah, definitely. It's important to journalism here in the city, and I think it's a trend that, you know, is picking up across the country.
Where is Chicago journalism headed, and what does this recent move by the Chicago Reader mean for Chicago journalism? Those are important questions. Harold Henderson is on the phone with us here on Outside the Loop. Again, the former staff writer for the Chicago Reader. Harold, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, Harold, did you see this coming when you found out last week? I'm assuming this was last week that you found out. Did you see this move coming?
Yes.
So just like that, you knew that this firing was imminent.
I knew something like this was going to happen. The Reader had been losing money for a while. The bonuses went away. And it's pretty much standard operating procedure that when things go bad, you can't spend money you don't have, at least not for very long. And you look at the folks who are most expensive. I will say, I didn't see this coming. I saw that there was a good chance that I could be on the chopping block. I thought I'd lower my profile a little bit and was lucky enough to pick up some good part-time work and go to 75% time. But that didn't lower my economic profile sufficiently. But, you know, it's an economic thing more than anything else. And it wasn't really a question of, you know, new ownership maybe took action a little faster than the old ownership would have, but somebody was going to do something. And it took me a very long time to even be able to conceive of life other than at the Reader. I was a lifer, but eventually I managed to work my way through that, and I would have bet on January rather than December. And I will say that when I talked with the editor a week ago, and she mentioned that John and Tori, and as it later transpired, Steve, were also being let go, my jaw was three stories down from the office where we were talking. I was then and am now astonished that they would throw Conroy under the bus under any circumstances.
Well, you're not the only one, Harold. You were at the Reader for almost 23 years, so obviously you know the paper and the workings of the paper very well, and you know the mission of that paper very well. These firings that happened last week, at least from a guy who picks up the paper every week and reads that paper, I think this is a serious blow to the Chicago Reader. What's your take on that?
Well, my friend and colleague Mike Miner, who's, even if he is still working there, still does the most thorough and judicious reporting on this that I've seen, described John in particular as the canary in the coal mine, which, when I read his blog, I thought, well, that's pretty good. And then another blogger, whose real name I don't know, came on and commented and said, no, I'm sorry, Mike, John was not the canary in the coal mine. He was the frigging post holding the whole roof up. and I wish I'd thought of that. But it was a very great shock. And at the same time, a lot of the comments that I've seen online about this have to do with the idea that the reader had gone all fluffy and was publishing people that some of the commenters considered to be unworthy. The name Liz Armstrong comes up a lot. And you can read the reader for years, but it is easy not to understand what its mission really was. This is not Mother Jones. This is not the Chicago Reporter. The reader's mission is not now and never was earnest moral uplift. We were not in the business of feeding you a pill about public affairs and making you swallow it. The one unbreakable rule that the paper had when I came there 22 years, 7 months and some odd days ago, was pretty much do what you need to do to be interesting. You know, if 10,000 words on beekeeping are interesting, do it. If short items about stupid things people have said or written in the last week is interesting, do it. But the only real sin back in those days was to be boring. And if some of us managed to be interesting while writing about, you know, socially important issues, et cetera, that's fine. But the mission was fundamentally entertainment and not uplift. And that, I'm not in agreement with all the policies that have ever been adopted there, but that idea is still present, even if it may not be followed as much as it was.
Well, Harold, the finances at the Reader, as you said before, they weren't the greatest. Money was getting tight. But isn't there a point where newspapers have to pay money for good journalism? I mean, if you want a good product, you've got to put some money into it.
Yeah. The question is really, as always, what the market will bear. And in the case of this, it's a little bit the reverse. I don't know quite how to say this, but people's taste may not be as elevated as you think it is. And they may settle for something less than the best. And someone who's interested strictly and only in maximizing their return may figure that they can cut the editorial budget by what must have been a huge percentage. But they came to the conclusion that they could put out a paper that was good enough. It wouldn't be as good as the old one, but they didn't care about that. And I think that's the calculus we're looking at. It's not all or nothing, and it's always a judgment call what you think people will stand for before they actually quit picking the thing up and pick up something else. And again, I don't know how to say this without sounding wrong, but they made a calculation that they could do okay without us.
Well, does that signal the fact that, in your opinion, that you think that the Reader could do okay without you in their mind? Does that signal a big shift into what the Reader is now becoming, where Creative Loafing, who is the company that now owns the Reader, where this company is taking the newspaper for the next 10, 20 years?
Well, I have seen no evidence whatsoever that Creative Loafing is meddling substantively in the editorial affairs. For good or ill, they don't seem to be that interested in the editorial content one way or the other, as long as it comes in under budget. Now, obviously, that does dictate some things. It dictates that Steve and John and Tori and I won't be in the paper very much, or will only be in the paper to the extent that we feel like doing the same work for less money.
So you are in a contractual relationship now with the Reader.
I have a couple stories in the pipeline and another one that I have agreed to do, although we haven't set a rate for it. Beyond that, I have no relationship. I mean, you can have a contract to be a freelancer, but I'm a free agent, and at least as soon as I get through with those stories that are in the pipeline.
Now, Harold, your future. What are you going to do now? I know that you've got a blog, and your blog was very popular on ChicagoReader.com, the Daily Herald, it was called. You have a new blog called HeraldDaily.blogspot.com. But what's the future for Harold Henderson?
I don't know yet. I think there's a good possibility that I might not be doing a whole lot of journalism. I'll still be writing because I can't help it. But I've considered a lot of things. I've been working with some friends who teach over at Notre Dame and helping them put their thoughts in order and writing some stuff in concert with them. I've got a bee in my bonnet that I think it would be a real gas to become a professional genealogist, and there's a lot of writing in that. There are other possibilities, you know, that may turn up. It took me a long time to get to the point where I could imagine not being a reader person forever, and I'm not prepared to jump right back into another harness. You know, there was no question when I came up here, this was the place I wanted to be, and I never could have asked for a better job than the job I had there for 22 years. I don't really ever expect to have a job that good again, but I'm going to look around, and I have enough margin that I can look around for a while and see what comes up.
What's the future of Chicago journalism? This was a big blow to the community of Chicago journalists, I think, and those who really enjoy and rely on alternative weeklies. But what is the future, in your eyes, of local journalism here in the city?
You know, I honestly don't know. I think there's the basic problem is paying for it. You know, it's all very well to blog, but somebody has to have done some kind of reporting at the end of that chain of blogs and comments and stuff. And the fewer people that are actually doing that reporting or doing it well, you know, the less there is for us bloggers to feed off of. And I think the reader was one example of a marriage that has supported journalism for a long time, a marriage between advertising and editorial. And I think what we're seeing is that marriage is slowly, painfully breaking up. And how are you going to pay for the journalism aside from that? I mean, a lot of people are talking about doing it in a not-for-profit way, but the fact is that even if you're not-for-profit, you still got to break even or else have a sugar daddy. And then sugar daddy, you know, if he has a bee in his bonnet, you'd better not go some places that you might otherwise go. The nice thing about being supported by ads, especially in the reader, which didn't depend on a single few monolithic ads, is that you were free, again, as long as you didn't bore people and cause them to not pick up the paper, you were pretty free to say whatever needed to be said or whatever you thought needed to be said at the time. And reconstructing that, finding a new marriage, I think is very difficult, and I certainly haven't thought of a way, and if someone else has, I haven't heard about it yet.
Well, Harold, we wanted just to get your take on what happened last week over at the Chicago Reader. Again, yourself, Tori Marlin, Steve Boguera, and John Conroy last week were fired from the Reader, and we just wanted to get your take on all of this, and we, of course, here at Outside the Loop, really enjoyed what you did in the Chicago Reader, and we look forward to reading you on the internet at your blog. Again, that blog is heralddaily.blogspot.com. That's heralddaily.blogspot.com. Harold Henderson is a former staff writer for the Chicago Reader. Harold, thanks so much for talking to us here on Outside the Loop.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to a clip from Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. For this clip, our audio archives, and complete shows, visit us at OutsideTheLoopRadio.com.